Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we test the fences of life and help each other on this journey of self-inquiry, self-development, life development. I don't know what to call it, but it's pretty great as we go around and around the cycle of human development. Today, we're going to talk about a number of different things. And before we do, I want to remind you that you can send in questions to questions@koabd.com. That's questions@koabd.com. I will personally write you back. And we'll often use the questions on the podcast. So when we get to the end of the podcast is when we bring up audience questions. So let me know how I can help, because that is why I'm here. So I want to talk about a bunch of things today. I want to talk about what is peace? What is it to be at peace? I want to talk about some really great questions that I found. And I want to talk about surgery and past trauma. I know, it's a big conglomeration of things, but here we go. So let's start with being at peace. Being at peace means something different to different people. And I was wondering the other day if peace means an open heart. And that's a really kitschy phrase. So let me explain. So several years ago, I made a conscious choice to love completely. So if you think of love as a really deep pool, I would always be holding on to the sides, or at least keeping my head above the water. To let go, to go under, and to surrender myself to the depths of love was to open myself to pain. It also meant missing out on the full experience of love. Now, a famous actress once said that all relationships end in tragedy by either death, desertion, or divorce. I wanted to be loved, but I didn't want to endure the inevitable pain. But here's the harsh reality. The pain, the tragic end, is inevitable. So why not fully experience the bliss of a love that is fully accepting and giving and protecting and nurturing? The deeper the love, the deeper the pain. I think that's true, although I'm actually questioning that lately. But even more painful would be the regret of having wasted the opportunity to love fully and to fully receive that love in return. Love that has no ulterior motives, love that celebrates your weirdness, that actively seeks ways to boost your experience. Dive in and breathe deep. Now, when I surrendered myself to the depth of that love, I was filled with the most profound sense of peace, like nothing I had ever felt. And it stayed with me for hours. And I feel it again every now and again. I try to get back there as often as I can. Now, in my never-ending search for a permanent peace, I can't help but wonder if peace is nothing more than a completely open heart. The decision to love completely. And I know I do tend to close my heart to protect it from being attacked by the people I care about. I have a bit of an unfortunate history there. Hurt people, so there's always someone in pain trying to fling their pain onto others like mud. I tend to take their pain inside me as if I could save them from it, but pain is how we learn. It's how life seeks to save you from your own bad choices. Pain is how life pushes you forward in your development. Those in pain need their pain, and by taking their pain into myself, I am depriving them. I'm slowing their ability to grow. I can't do that. I'm doing more harm than good. They need that pain to help them see their truth. When people fling their pain at you through ugly words or actions, they're really just showing their pain like a cry for help. To them, I must send their pain back to them where it is needed the most. And I must do so with an open heart. So that is why I sort of declared for myself a philosophy that if you send your pain to me, I will stop it in its tracks and send it back to you with love, and your pain will surround you like fireflies, illuminating the real truth behind your cry for help. And I will see it, and you will see it, and everyone will see your truth. And you will then have the opportunity to grow. So maybe peace is an open heart with carefully constructed boundaries? I don't know. Lately, I'm starting to think that peace and the solution to a lot of problems comes from connection. That connection is really the basis of everything. What is an open heart but a willingness to fully connect with another person intellectually, in terms of the heart, in terms of their truth, in terms of wisdom, in terms of intuition? What is that? Connection is something that I'm going to write about in the near future and we'll talk about here on the podcast. But I'm starting to think that's what it really comes down to. All right. So a first question for you on this podcast is, what is peace to you? And months ago, we wrote, it seems like forever. I wrote about several different types of peace, right? There's physical peace, mental peace, emotional peace, financial peace. Thank you, Dave Ramsey. There's different types of peace, right? So defining that for yourself is a really, really informative exercise, and one that I recommend. So I gathered up this huge list of like awesome questions. It's called Giant List of Great Questions. Go check it out on the website in the observations section, Giant List of Great Questions. As I find more great questions, I'm going to add them in here. And some of my favorites are, what advice would you give to your younger self? But even better is, what advice would your older self give to you? If you could talk to yourself 20 years from now, 40 years from now, what would you tell yourself? And this is a surprisingly revealing question. Questions about limiting beliefs are always a good idea. You always have more limiting beliefs than you realize that you do. And when they start flowing out, you can be pretty shocked. Here's another good one. What do your friends say is the reason they like to have you around? How do you make them feel? This can be a really uncomfortable exercise to ask them. They're going to think it's weird. But that's another one that's really worth doing. So check out the Giant List of Great Questions. And send me more. If you've got more, send them to me. So you can send them into questions, funny enough, at koabd.com. That's questions at koabd.com. Okay, so this topic came up, surgery and past trauma. And let me begin this by saying I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about in terms of authority on the subject. I've only got my own personal experiences and those of a small number of others. So let me know if you've had something similar going on. I know for a fact that this doesn't happen to everybody, but trauma is a funny thing. So when we say that it scars us, it means that we physically store it in our bodies. And that's not a unique idea, right? We store stress in our bodies and end up with tight shoulders or neck pain and you know, or back pain, and a good massage really kind of works out that stress. We pack it away in our muscles physically. Now, trauma seems to get packed away a little bit more deeply. Trauma that we have not fully come to terms with can then resurface after surgery, even relatively minor surgery. And I should note here that recovery from surgery of any kind, I don't care if it's just a small surgery to, you know, take off like a basal cell carcinoma thing from your skin, right? Just a minor skin surgery or something bigger. The recovery from that surgery has its own sort of grieving of the loss of whatever was cut out of you. And the trauma of the surgery itself is something that you must feel and have compassion for yourself in dealing with it. But on top of that, you may also awaken past trauma that you have not fully dealt with. And again, this is a subject that I'm absolutely not an expert on, except that I've experienced it myself. I've watched my family experience it. But then again, I've spoken to others who said, no, they didn't have any issue at all, right? So it's possible, it's not guaranteed. So for example, several years after an assault, I had a LEAP procedure to avert cervical cancer. And it's just done in the doctor's office. It's not even something you have to go to a hospital for. But it brought me back sharply to the same feelings that I had post-assault, the feelings that I had packed away and had not dealt with. And it surfaced that trauma again. And it's not just assault trauma that comes back to haunt us. I've heard stories of Vietnam War vets who are now in their 70s and their 80s who decades later are triggered into full-blown PTSD-style flashbacks post-surgery. Of course, the wrong medication doesn't help the situation at all. What is it about our body's healing that takes that makes them take the opportunity to try and purge this past trauma as well? Trauma and hate and anger that are stored inside are poison. Now, some claim that that's exactly the cause of the very disease that ultimately led us to the surgery that triggered it. Google that idea. That's kind of interesting. What if you stored your trauma in a particular organ, or you stored your hate and your anger in a particular organ that later became diseased, that led you to have a surgery on it that then again revealed the trauma? Something similar tends to happen with stress issues that you packed away in particular muscles. Some people like to store their stress in their neck, some people in their shoulders, some people in their back. Most people will store their work stress in their neck, and their family stress will be further down, which is kind of funny. But working those particular muscle will call forth a particular issue in your mind. And I think surgery can be similar. So regardless, surgical procedures certainly seem to, in my very, very limited experience, bring past issues to the surface as the body tries to heal. Now maybe healing is about the whole body and the mind as well. So here's a question for you. What have you not dealt with? What have you packed away, or you think you've dealt with it, but deep in your heart you know you haven't 100% dealt with it? What have you packed away that's going to be released years, possibly decades from now? What would it be? And during your meditation, can you scan your body and ask, where am I storing this? And become aware. And can you work to release that? Might be a really great exercise to do. So that's what I'm thinking about surgery and past trauma. And I know it's not the sort of thing that I normally write about, but I had such an interesting experience with that I really felt like I wanted to talk about that. There we are. So audience question. This is really insightful. Okay. So this question came from an audience member that has a pretty good commute in a car, usually about an hour. And he suggests that just having long commutes, that the worse your commute is, the more negative and kind of angry and in a bad mood you tend to be when you get to work. And while this could certainly explain some of the attitudes of people who work at LAX, that's supposed to be a joke, but it's kind of not, a nasty commute certainly does put you in a bad mood. And worse than that, it makes you think less of other people. And worse than that, it makes you commoditize other people. It makes you see other people not as human, right? They're just this other car on the road. They're not a real person behind the wheel dealing with whatever they're dealing with. And that's not good, especially when you start your day that way, right? That's not how this listener wanted to start his day. So how can you, short of working until you can get to a point of financial independence and then quitting and never having to have a commute again, if you can do that, do that. But if you're stuck that for a period of time you're going to have this commute and you are aware of that, what can you possibly do to avoid getting into that commuter mindset where you're commoditizing other people and then you're walking into your office with that attitude, with this disconnection from other people? So I think there's a few things, and this is, I'm going to try to make this a really, really practical thing. You're in your car for like an hour. You can tend to get very disconnected. So one, you want to deal with the issue of disconnection. And two, you want to make sure that there's nothing extra that's negatively impacting the situation. So let's start with that. So step one would be don't make it worse. I would not recommend listening to the news in the car. I would not recommend listening to talk shows in the car. Bombarding yourself with headlines and politics, which are just soaked in hate. I don't care which side you're on. They're just soaked in hate and negativity and commoditizing other people and disconnection. I would avoid headlines and political radio in the car. I would actively use that time to better yourself. Audiobooks, podcasts, language learning. I would use that time, because then at a minimum you don't feel like you're wasting your time, right? At least you're using that hour for something. So I would use that time to better yourself. Focus on you. And yes, people are going to do absolutely asinine things behind the wheel, right? You've got drivers that are on their cell phones, not paying attention to the road like at all. You've got people that are doing their hair or putting on makeup, not paying attention to the road at all. And you know what? We all used to be there. We all used to be like, oh no, I can multitask. I can do this. No, you can't. So when somebody does something stupid and unwise on the road, see them as a reflection of yourself. Don't disconnect from that, because I'm going to wager there was a point in your life where you did that too. That you haven't always been a perfect driver either. So just see them as, yeah, I used to do that too. And go back to focusing on you and your own self-improvement. It gets really hard, especially when other drivers put you in a dangerous situation. We can tend to get really angry. Because why? Because it just puts you back in stage three. I am my needs, and I need to survive, and I need to get to work today, and I need to make money because I have this bill I need to pay. You will find that you get less and less commuter mindset as, number one, you establish financial independence. then it's not, I have to get to work because I have to get the paycheck because the credit card bill is overdue, right? So as you become debt-free, as you become financially independent, there'll be less of that, but certainly not zero. But the more you focus on yourself, and then when you get to work and you get parked, take a minute. I don't care if it's 30 seconds, 60 seconds. Breathe. Deflate. Let it all go. Just take a big deep breath in and just blow it out like you're deflating a balloon. All the way down to your belly. And then set an intention. Think about people that you love. Think about people that you want to be deeply connected to. These may not be people at work at all. I don't care. But think about people that elicit the feeling of love and connection in you. And take a moment to virtually connect with those people and to feel deeply connected and to feel love and to feel good things. And then go into work. So if you can't, and my point being, if you can't entirely prevent what we'll call, you know, commuter attitude, you can counteract it when you get there. Okay, so let's run that down. Avoid listening to things that are going to put you in a negative mindset, right? That car environment is yours to control. If you're the driver, it's yours to control. So control it. Focus on your own self-improvement. Two, see others as a reflection of you, as some aspect of your past or potentially of your future. You could slip into that whole multitasking thing. It could happen. And then three, counteract it when you get where you're going. Just take 1 minute to let it go. Think about people and connect deeply with people that you love and put yourself in the right mindset so that you can connect to people on a work level. But that's still personal connection, mental connection, and compassion connection, and wisdom connection, and being open to them. And you know that you'll start to spot the difference when you're open versus when you're closed. Practice being open with people when you get there and seeing their humanity and creating a connection with them. And that should help. But underneath all of that, you need to be working towards a time when you don't have to do that, when you don't have to commute as far. That could mean moving closer. It could mean getting a job that's closer to your house or getting a house that's closer to your job. Changing industries, finding a way to work from home, getting to a point of financial independence where you don't need to work at all, and so on and so forth. Keep your eye on the goal. Keep your eye on your own improvement and keep your eye on the goal. That'll make it a little bit easier. It's not going to be perfect, but that'll give you some ideas to try. Let us know how it works. So send in your thoughts, ideas, and questions to questions@koabd.com. That's questions@koabd, as in kind of a big deal, .com. Thanks for joining us this time. I look forward to helping, so let me know how I can help, and we'll catch you on the next episode.